SiriusXM 111. Here again is Dan Loney.
And this is the second hour of Knowledge at Wharton here on SiriusXM 111, Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School. Monday, May the 16th, on a beautiful but chilly day here in the city of Philadelphia. Great to have you with us. Coming up here in hour number two, in just a minute, we're going to look at business from a bit of a historical perspective about how companies need to consider looking back in their history in order to be successful in the future. We're going to be joined by Bruce Weindruck, who has written a book about that, and his company, The History Factory, does that for corporations. The book is called Start with the Future and Work Back. We'll be talking with him coming up in just a minute. Many of you know that, obviously, one of the most popular movies in the last 30 years was Back to the Future. Well, those words may very well have an important meaning in business. Bruce Weindruck, founder and CEO of The History Factory, has written a book about the importance of legacy assets in making a company even better heading into the future. The book is titled Start with the Future and Work Back. And Bruce, who, from what I read in the notes, was once referred to as the Willie Loman of history, joins us on the phone right now. Bruce, is that a true, really, is it a true definition of you?
Well, I certainly appreciated it at the time. You can learn a lot about leadership and about business from fiction, but in reality, I really was that way. In the early days, I used to walk into a client with a stack of, books and photographs and things, and say, this is what history is all about.
Yeah.
And a fellow finally stopped me one day and said, now, wait a minute, just tell them what they can do with it. Don't bring in all the props. So I abandoned the Willie Loman approach and have gone a little bit more consultative ever since.
Before we get into the book, explain your company, The History Factory, and exactly what it does.
Yeah, the History Factory, we've coined the phrase a heritage management agency.
Yeah.
We go into large organizations. They can be for-profit, not-for-profit, including some large families, and we help them manage their historical assets. One side of the business is the actual management and outsourcing of corporate archives. We help them run their archival assets. And then the other side is about use, helping advise organizations on how they can use that heritage to meet the particular needs, challenges, and opportunities that they have.
Do a lot of companies not take advantage of their history as a great selling point these days?
Well, you know, again, we've been around for a long time, and it's these days that's the important point.
Sure. Yeah.
It really depends, Dan, on where we are in a cycle. Right now, we're in a slow growth period. Stability, continuity, longevity. So we are seeing more organizations pivoting toward using their history. But I would argue, probably in 1999, when we were in a heated era up until 2000, it was all new and future looking and improved. So I would argue over our history since 1979, we see waves of use and non-use. It really, though, places an emphasis then on maintaining the record, because you know there will be periods when you're going to want to go access it, and there will be times that you may not need it as much.
But it is interesting that, and you'll see it from time to time, especially in TV, that companies will make an attempt to look back to, you know, they're trying to reach a specific demographic, and a lot of times it may be the baby boomer generation or, you know, that realm. And really, sometimes to reach people like that, you do need to have a historical perspective.
Well, that's an interesting point you make. Number one, we're very fortunate right now. The millennial profile is one that really appreciates and values authenticity, originality, and meaning.
Yeah.
So, of course, you're right. A lot of marketers are being very real and using history for that. But in other points, you're exactly right. There's a very targeted approach. If you want to tap into a memory base, and your brand is usually part of someone's memory, you can target it using that particular entry point of that historical point. So whether it's a cereal that you grew up with, an automobile that your father owned, or whatever, you can use history in a very targeted way, particularly in branding and advertising, to connect specifically to an audience.
The company you just said is a heritage management company. The book, the subhead on the book is a heritage management manifesto. So manifesto, I mean, that strikes to me that, you know, this is something that companies have to think about now, because it can have an unbelievable change in the profitability and the prospects of companies going forward.
Yeah, well, manifesto is part of the, you know, in my case, there's a notion of passion and impatience. We're fairly impatient. It's a big idea, and we want organizations to rally to it. The other side of a manifesto, to your point, you put this in the hands of the right individual at the right time, they can actually make things move, make things happen. And so the book is, we hope, filled with examples of how organizations were able to use their heritage to move something.
What companies are doing that well?
Well, I mean, you've got the ones that have done it forever, and the ones that would come to mind are obviously people like Coca-Cola.
Sure, yeah.
People like Harley-Davidson. These are companies that their muscle memory is such that they pivot toward using their heritage to connect. They differentiate themselves with it. There are newer companies, though, that have come along and are using it quite well. Companies like Adobe, companies like, if you go to their Facebook page, you'll see a lot of use of their heritage there. Younger companies, Google celebrates almost every anniversary, every year of the company. It's a way for them, again, to differentiate themselves, to orient. So it's not we're finding so much chronological age, Dan.
Yeah.
It's what they've done in that period of time.
And it is interesting. When we talk about history, a lot of times, as you mentioned, with a company like Coca-Cola, you're talking about, you know, a product that's been around for, you know, 100 years or longer.
Yeah.
But a company like Google, which has a much shorter time frame, yet has done so much and has a level of history that, you know, for them is just as important as what Coke has for them.
Absolutely, it's really what you've done. We try to say, if you don't have more ticks in your timeline in the past 5 years than you had in your first 100 years, you're probably dead. And so these are organizations that are doing a tremendous amount. By the way, it's not surprising that Facebook has front and center on the Facebook page a timeline. It's basically the way people kind of gauge where they are at any given point.
We're talking with Bruce Weindrick, who is the author of the book Start with the Future and Work Back. Your comments are welcome at 844-WHARTON, 844-942-7866. There may be something within your business or your area that you think could benefit from asking a question of them. 844-942-7866. You know, going on your company's website, you have a variety of obviously different firms and different sectors that you deal with. But realistically, you're talking about a concept that it seems like it's a fairly similar type of approach. The items and the history might be different, but the philosophy itself, I would think, would be the same for a company like Coke as it might be for, you know, you've done work with Walter Reed Hospital. You know,
absolutely.
I mean, you're moving down the same path.
Yeah, and we are industry agnostic, and because, again, I would argue to your point, not only that you don't even have to be old, and you don't have to be in any particular industry. Our approach is what we call start with the future and work back, and we apply it across the board. What is an organization doing today to get to tomorrow? That's our way to prioritize then what to go back into the history and pull forward. So we can apply that to a manufacturer. We can apply that to a financial services industry. We can apply that to a branded goods company. You name it. But it's the point of view that we apply that makes it relevant. That's the key.
You talk in the book about one company that you talk about is the Hartford, the insurance company. And you also talk about, it was interesting, I saw it in the notes originally and went into the book and found it to read it a little bit more in depth, about the relationship that the Hartford had with Abraham Lincoln. And a story that I guess was not told for quite some time and actually now is a benefit to the Hartford.
It was a story that was hidden for 100 and some years. It had been told always the same way. Right. We insured Abraham Lincoln.
Right.
And that was the story. When we talked to the folks at the Hartford, they were under TARP coverage. They were trying to make sure that they reestablished their reputation and their connection to the agents. So when they told us that, we went to their history and looked at it from a completely different point of view, the point of view of starting with the future. The agents are important to us. We looked at that Hartford story. We asked them the question, who is the agent that underwrote the famous Lincoln policy?
Yeah.
They didn't know. Well, it was fairly easy. You looked on the policy. You found the name. It was a guy named James Hill. We then went and did the research in Springfield. And then it became a really interesting story. Hill gets called by a presidential elect who's going to leave town in a day. He goes over to the house. We see his notes. He measures the house. He inventories the contents. And he quickly writes the policy so that Lincoln can leave for Springfield, Illinois, for Washington, D.C. It's the same story, but the hero has changed. It's no longer about the president. It's about that agent who did that great work for a client.
Yeah.
And that's how you reposition the history.
One of the other firms that you talk about in here, and it's funny, when I saw it, I remembered it from when I was a younger guy, because I'm 49, so I remembered it. And I didn't realize that they were still around, I guess, is Fireman's Fund.
Yeah, they're hanging in by a slender thread, my friend.
Yeah.
They are part of Allianz. But yes, Fireman's Fund was a situation that, even that funny name, which stuck in your mind.
Absolutely,
They had been funded in the times when literally volunteer firemen, it was a dangerous job.
Yep.
So they wanted to have a fund that if they were injured, they would give money to the widows and children. That was enlightened self-interest because, again, they hoped then those firemen would go to the fire marks with the Fireman's Fund on it. Well, they became obsolete within a few years. Municipal fire departments come in, but they kept that funny name.
Yeah.
Fast forward, post 9/11, when there's a need to reconnect and support first responders, Fireman's Fund comes, takes a look at the history, and recommits themselves to taking, as they had originally done, a portion of their profits and give it to first responders.
Yeah.
Here, 150 years later, they reposition themselves to their original mission, and the name once again made sense.
Speaking of 9/11, you talk in the book about doing work with New York Life post 9/11. You're documenting history, and obviously the company is looking for legacy material that it can use in a variety of different formats, but we're talking about one of the most devastating days in the history of the United States, right up there with Pearl Harbor. You know, how do you work in that type of environment and be wary of not just the history of the company, but also the history and the feelings of the employees and all of the people of that entire region?
Yeah, we took that very seriously, Dan. Again, our company itself, we're here in Washington, D.C. I was stuck in Vancouver. My plane landed in Vancouver, and I was up there for a week. We had several clients who were in the World Trade Center. It's devastating. Having said that, as you move a day, two, 3 days away, you start to realize that, number one, our goal is to not only be preserving this, because it is so important. And our companies all, and most companies did, worked very hard to preserve the response. But most importantly, how can one then turn that response back toward those people who've been so profoundly affected? And New York Life is one of those. But they had two issues there. Number one, They're a mutual company. Mutuality, by its very nature, implies a connection to its people. New York is in its name, New York Life. Yeah. And number three, their icon is that very big, tall tower in New York.
Yeah.
There was some concern at the time, would they possibly be targeted as a next, as you'll remember, there was all those questions. So they had a whole multiplicity of challenges, but they defaulted to stability. We've been there for our customers. We have a mutual feeling for you, and we work with them to reestablish, reconnect, and communicate a message of really caring during that time.
Bruce Weindrick joins us. The book that he has written is called Start with the Future and Work Back. Your comments are welcome at 844-WHARTON, 844-942-7866. Or if you can't get to your phone, send us a comment via Twitter, either at BizRadio111 or my Twitter account, which is at Dan Loney, L-O-N-E-Y-21. I'd be interested to know how media companies deal with this issue, because especially in the TV industry, they have a lot of this material, you know, on old videotape and, you know, in a variety of different forms. But how do they deal with remembering their past to take it into the future?
You know, that's a really good question. There's a wonderful story that's always told. Hugh Hefner, notoriously well known for many years, back in the 60s, used to record off the airwaves television shows he wanted to watch.
Yep, yeah.
And he's archived them. It's been said that he has one, I think, or possibly two of the only copies of movies that were shown, you know, on the daytime television movie channel. He picked those up and taped them, and he has the only copies of them. This is a huge issue for some of the large media companies. It's a huge issue for some of the film companies. I will say this, as they progressed, they have looked for opportunities either with the Academy, with other places. There are wonderful things, whether it's the Paley Center in New York, whether it's the Hartman Center down in North Carolina. A lot more public-private partnerships and preservation. What I'm more concerned about, Dan, where's all the YouTube footage going? Think about that video.
Yeah.
But yes, the media companies started to sink under their own weight, as they did in a lot of ways in the 80s. And what we've been seeing in the last few years is an effort, public and private, to preserve that history.
You talk in the book about this idea of story arc. What is it and its importance in this whole process?
Well, we've spent a lot of time thinking about how a good story is told. And to be honest, you know, there's a lot of scholarship on it. Good stories tend to be told in three acts. There's an awareness act, there's a challenge, there's always a danger point, and then there's always rebirth.
Yep.
And you can take this all the way to the Bible, right on through to probably the movies you're seeing all the time.
Yep.
Where we've applied it, Dan, is in the corporate setting for many years, the story was always told, here's the founding date, and then they work their way to today.
Yep.
This is the reason why people don't pay money for corporate history books, but they will pay money to go see a movie, or they will buy a popular trade book. So, what we've done is we've applied the same storytelling technique to corporate stories. And what's interesting about it is people respond to that because it has an arc of a story that brings them along. It's amazing sometimes when you actually tell them their story based on a story arc principle, you get to the rebirth period and a very current, very, very cynical executive will look at you and go, so how's it turn out? And you go, well, you're going to have to do that yourself. I can't help you there. They get so caught up in the arc of the story that they even wonder how it's going to turn out. So story arc is just, again, using good, solid story structure to make it more interesting and engaging.
You mentioned earlier about authenticity. And obviously that's a big thing with companies right now, in all kinds of facets. The other kind of avenue, and it plays off of that word authenticity that a lot of people in corporate America use today, and maybe it's a word that isn't received as well because I don't know, maybe it's just my opinion, is transparency. You know, authenticity almost feels like a positive. Transparency, in some respects, almost feels like a negative.
Yeah. Well, this has been something we've, a challenge that people have thought we had for many years, which is, so what do you do when you find something in a company's history that's bad?
Yeah.
Or what happens in a company's history when it's bad? Well, to be totally honest, and this plays toward the notion of transparency, people look at a corporate history like young boys used to look at the dictionary. They always look for the dirty words first. It's just how it is. People want, if you are not transparent in history, when using history, you will sink the entire effort because people want honesty and transparency in the history. This doesn't mean one has to air one's dirty laundry, but what it does mean is, if indeed you have had a situation, this is your opportunity to use your history to what we call repent and reform. This gives you a context for which perhaps something happened. Mm. Transparency and context are very, very important next to each other. To just be transparent without explaining why, history gives you an opportunity to do that.
You mentioned more and more companies are obviously doing this and looking back to move forward. And seemingly, if I read you correctly early on, that this is a trend that will continue for quite some time because millennials are backward thinking at times, looking back at history to try and move forward to the future.
Yeah, I think there's two things happening, and they're not coincidental. One is with the kind of democratization of information and content, there's a need to just fill the pipes. So that's one thing that is causing this uptick. And second of all, with a group of people who have grown up with that democratization of information, knowing no borders, knowing no time frames, just being there all the time, those individuals, that cohort, they themselves appreciate that. So there's two things happening. I think the technology and the people and the culture are coming together that way.
What do you see then for the future of this? Because you know, you go on your website, you've obviously worked with a lot of great companies at this point, but seemingly there are so many more out there that probably could benefit from understanding this philosophy and letting it just kind of marinate as part of the corporate culture.
Yeah, well, that's why we issued the book. We really do believe this. We're open too. We want people to get on board. In terms of our support of it, you know, we're lucky. We've been really lucky in that we've had great clients who've kind of brought us along. Self-selected. We ended up with companies who really and truly wanted to be substantial in using their heritage. So, yeah, we're lucky. We feel like a startup after 36 years. It's still very growing. We're like a startup with history. No pun intended.
Yeah.
But we have a history as a company, but we use history as our methodology. So no, we see this as frankly becoming more and more just the way heritage management will be, just like any other kind of management tool.
And the benefit to that is that everybody, I think most people in America, love a good story. We are more willing to sit down and listen to a good story told by somebody that you know is a good storyteller than we are for a lot of other things within our society.
Well, you know, again, I think if you look at the great brands and you look at the great companies, and you can go through the list of them, whether it's the best to work for, whether it's the most admired, whether it's the power brands, I think you'll pretty much come to that conclusion. They're all very good storytellers.
Bruce, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. It's a really good book. Thanks very much for coming on today.
Dan, thanks for having me.
Thanks very much, sir. Bruce Weindrich, the book is Start with the Future and Work Back, A Heritage Management Manifesto. It's a really good book, especially if you're involved with a company that does have a history and maybe it's not used enough in looking forward in terms of what the future history of the company will be.